Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is a regular business meeting for Tuesday, October 21st. The time is just after 7 p.m. Liz, will you call the roll, please?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Hanford, Cuddeback, Rasmussen, and Gearing.
Thank you. And I understand that Councilmember Camp is out, ill, and Councilmember Gamble had stated last week that he would not be here this evening. Councilmember Gearing will go ahead and say the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The first item that we have on this evening's agenda is under announcements and presentations. We have a swearing-in ceremony for Officer Derek Leather. And could you let the record show that Councilmember Davis has entered the chambers at 7:03? Thank you.
We're going to deviate from this just a little bit. As many of you know, we're going to start the municipal court here in Monroe on the 1st of January, and we'll no longer be utilizing this court that Judge Fluff has so graciously presided over for 36 years. Okay, 36 years. And during that time, I haven't been the chief that whole time. My previous job, I had contact with the judge, and I don't know if you could find a finer judge in San Francisco than Judge Fluff. I came here to Monroe. One thing I found out very quickly that the judge watches out for the city of Monroe. We had a couple of situations where he said, you know, the village saved some money to do this. And we went ahead and did it. And, I personally really appreciate it. And the police department does too. One thing that I was told that you asked for was that you, after you go to the municipal court, you still be the person that swears in our new officers.
Oh, yeah.
Again, we are very much in favor of that.
Keep that tradition going.
Okay. And I got one other thing I'd like to give you as a chief's coin.
Oh, thank you.
And again, thank you very much for everything you've done for us.
Still to show, but Monroe is my favorite place. My family moved to Monroe in 1953. I went all through elementary and high school here. Returned here in 72, practiced law school 78, and been here ever since. So Monroe is my home. And yes, I do like to all of you. And you've done a great job over the years.
Well, as I usually say, they've written out what I'm supposed to say here, so I don't, like I just did with the judge. So, anyway, thank you all those in attendance, Mayor Thomas, council members, family, friends, and our officer being recognized tonight. Thank you, Judge Fluff, for officiating the ceremony. It's my pleasure to introduce Officer Derek Leather.
I'm going to write that down. Like leap.
If you raise your right hand, please, you put it up there. I, Derek Leather.
I, Derek Leather.
Leather. Solemnly swear.
Solemnly swear.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution and the laws of the state of Washington.
And the Constitution and the laws of the state of Washington.
And the ordinances of the city of Monroe.
And the ordinances of the city of Monroe.
And that I will faithfully discharge the duties.
That I will faithfully discharge the duties.
Of police officer for the city of Monroe Police Department.
Of police officer for the city of Monroe Police Department.
And that I will do so to the best of my ability.
That I will do so to the best of my ability.
And you can first read
that. Thank you.
Derek began his career with our Fire Department November 4th, 2013. He graduated from Basic Law Enforcement Academy on June 18th, 2014 and just recently finished his field training assignment. He has already made a mark on our new community through his recent assistance to homeless teen with disabilities and news story that went nationwide. Please help me congratulate Officer Luther in joining our agency. Have someone pin the badge on.
Gotta get through all these good-looking women here. That's right.
Trust our.
Come on. It's not like building a plane, son.
The next item that we have on this evening's agenda is confirmation of appointment to the Civil Services Commission. So Civil Services Commissioner Ron Moon's term expired in September, and he was not eligible for reappointment. Christy Wilson, who is an assistant chief with the City of Redmond, was selected through the application interview process to fill the open position. Her term will begin on October 21st and run through September 30th of 2020. You're here, yes? So does anybody have any questions or comments? Councilmember Gehring?
Thanks. Thank you. I would move to confirm the mayor's appointment of Christy Wilson to the Civil Services Commission.
Second.
The first from Councilmember Gehring, a second from Councilmember Cuddeback. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much. And I think we have the oath of office now.
Discharge the duties of Civil Services Commissioner according to law and to the best of your ability and understanding.
I do.
Thank you very much, and congratulations, Commissioner Wilson.
I'm out.
Yeah. Okay. The next item that we have on the agenda is a presentation on our chaplain program. We have Pastor Hanford here today. Thank you very much for coming to give the presentation.
Thank you, and I'll ask Chaplain Wheatley to come up at this time as well. We wanted to kind of give you a brief presentation, and I'm going to deal with basically the history, the training involved, our duties, the events and groups that we are a part of, and maybe a couple stories if I have time. So, in regards to the history, Sister Barbara, who was sitting right there a little earlier but went to the reception, was our first chaplain for Monroe Police Department, began January 1st, 1983. We added several chaplains, including myself, June 1st, 1998. We had our first Police Appreciation Week in 1999, and have had lunch ever since that time in 1999, in November. We became police and fire chaplains. The fire department came on board with us and embraced us in 2008, and we have a working relationship with both departments at this time. The Police and Fire Appreciation Lunch, I believe, began in 2008, and it continues on in the Police and Fire Appreciation Week in November. So, Pastor Tim, Captain Tim Wheatley, share about the training.
Mayor Thomas and members of the City Council, it's a privilege to serve the City of Monroe as a police and fire chaplain, and I thank you for making that possible. Pastor Hanford has asked me to share a bit about our training, and as the chaplains in the program, several of us have had the opportunity to go to the Washington Criminal Justice Training Center for a week of training, and while there, we learned about the philosophy of chaplaincy, the anatomy of crisis, sensitivity and diversity, crisis victims, personnel, death notification, ethics, crime scene investigation, forensics, first responder, family life, stress, post-traumatic stress, safety, incident command, suicide, assessment, intervention, postvention, and injury line of death duty protocols. We have 23 sessions that take place over that week. And then some of us have also had the opportunity to do some other training, emotional and spiritual care in disasters, as well as some well-being training. And it's our desire as chaplains working to serve the city to provide as excellent a service as we can, that we can be prepared for the situations in which we might find ourselves. At the academy, there were a couple of things that caught my attention. As you can imagine, with 40-some hours of training, there's a lot of information. But I just wanted to mention a couple of things. A chaplain is basically saying, I'm here to wait with you, to be with you. I want to support you. I want to be a ray of sunshine during this dark time. Also, there's a quote from Judy Stewart that says, a chaplain is those who run in with compassion when everyone else leaves. And another quote that I found especially helpful, and this is from Pat Hammond, who's a chaplain in Redmond. It says, I'm a crisis intervention specialist. I'm here to serve you. Basically, I offer practical, emotional, relational, and, upon request, spiritual support. So our primary job when we come into a situation is to assess that situation in terms of the needs of the victims and survivors, and then to transfer them to their own support system or the next level of support that we can find. And our training times have helped us become aware of what chaplain programs are doing in other communities near to us, but also in other states. At the academy, when I was there, we actually had a chaplain there from New Zealand. So we get an opportunity to see what's done in other parts of the world as well. One other thing that I found particularly helpful when I was there was that some of the chaplains are able to serve full-time. Of course, in the private sector, that's possible because they can be paid by the private enterprise. But in the public sector, we can't use public funds to pay chaplains. And so in many cases, in some communities, the chaplains have been able to participate with a chaplain nonprofit, and then they're able to actually work full-time for the community they serve. And we're hoping that someday some of us will have the opportunity to do that, because it's really our heart to represent a standard of excellence in serving the community. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Captain Wheaton. And this illustrates the kind of team approach we have in Monroe. We have had a team of as many as 8 chaplains. I believe we're now currently down to 5, with 2 kind of on leave, you might say. So, as Tim referred to, some of our duties, our chief duty is to be there firstly for our officers and firefighters, and for the city of Monroe, for the personnel of the city of Monroe, and the fire and police department. We are called into a lot of tough situations. The duties involve dealing with tough situations, as Chaplain Wheatley referred to. Death notifications, suicide scenes. The fun part is the ride-alongs, where we connect with the officers and firefighters and EMTs and get to know them as people, so that in a crisis we're able to help them effectively. We deal with families, broken families in our community, families that are suffering tragedies right that minute, whether it's accidents, suicides, follow-ups to attempted suicides. We are called to accidental shooting scenes, fire displacements. We go to hospitals, crime scenes, homes, domestics, and we try, as Tim referred to connect firstly, after we assess, under the direction of the officer in charge, whether it's fire or police, and it could be state patrol, it could be sheriff, but we're primarily Monroe police and fire, but we have been called to other jurisdictional scenes. If the people involved in this thing are part of a congregation, we have directories for all the congregations, emergency numbers, and we connect them with their congregational pastors or someone from that group. If they don't have a congregation, we help them have a presence of mind to figure out who is their support group, if it's a Rotary Club person or a Scout Master or someone, anybody, a veteran. We try to help them to make the right calls, because, you know, in those times you're just all nervous and don't know what to do. Some of the events we've participated in, obviously the Police and Fire Appreciation event is one of our favorites. We came up with it, and as the chaplaincy, and expanded it to include other community partners, the faith community, as well as Rotary Club, the school district, and the YMCA, and the Chamber of Commerce, and some others. The police memorials we've done for the community. May is Police Memorial Month, and we haven't had like a service, but we used to have services. We kind of put it all together in November to call attention to various things in police and fire. The walk to school with the kids is always something we try to participate in. Needs in the community, gang awareness events, we spearheaded meeting certain needs in the community in various ways. The domestic violence task force, we helped organize the domestic violence awareness candlelight vigil last year, and October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. We work in liaison with the faith community, pastors and congregations. We help mobilize, we help inform, and get congregations and their pastors involved in supporting community partners to to solve problems in the community. It was probably 7 years ago, I think, that I was called out on a Saturday, typical day like we had today, wind, rain, to a tragic hunting fatality accident and in the Tualco area. We were able to help connect the family with their pastors, be there for their family. It was a multi chaplain agency event, and that it's hard to forget those things, and that's why we're here, is to help in these tough situations. Another situation, I remember going to Valley General to meet several members of a family who had been in a multi-car accident. One of them died. There were kids, there was parents and grandparents, and I remember working with them and helping them just wait for the outcomes of certain things. I remember there was a teen that was racing with another teen up on High Rock Road, and I remember coming to the Valley General probably 5 years ago, I think it was a fatality accident. Team that was kind of racing was killed as the car went into the ditch, and there was probably 45 to 50 during a period of 1 a.m. to 4 a.m. at the hospital, friends who came one by one in groups, showed up, and I helped them get into areas of the hospital that where they could be. Just be there and talk and grieve and cry and all that kind of stuff. Those are emotionally draining situations for a pastor or a chaplain or anybody, any one of us to be in. I remember many suicide scenes, helping the survivor for that season. For a while there in that instance. I remember lastly, I wanted to bring up that we were called by the school district to come to the bus barn because the drivers were all coming back, and one of the drivers had checked under the bus and the bus rolled back over him and he was killed. And so we were there. Those are the kind of things that we go to and we are a part of. We count it a calling, I think. We count it a privilege to be a part of caring and loving and putting an arm around this community. We love this community. We love the people of this community. We love the youth of this community. And it's a privilege to be a part. So we wanted to let you know some of those things that we do. Are there any questions?
Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, not a question, just a comment. As someone who has witnessed my father receiving phone calls, texts during the middle of a weekend or a holiday, I've witnessed how he's responded to those and how he actually cares. And it's definitely there. So on behalf of you, but also all the other chaplains, we're definitely grateful for all that you do and all the, really, your caring heart. So,
could I say one more thing?
Yes, sir.
Just so you know, it's not always solemn. I went out on a call a couple of years ago, and three of the fire personnel were there, and one of them was washing dishes, and one of the spouse, the male, had passed away in his sleep. And I walked in, and I was introduced to the wife, and we started talking a little bit. And then the sheriff came, the deputy came, with the protocol, and we explained to her what was going to take place. She goes, "Well, I suppose you're here to see if I murdered my husband." And, you know, that kind of humor. And then the deputy went in for a little bit, comes back, she says, "Well, did she find the knife in his back?"
Then everybody left. It was just the lady and me, and that happens a lot of times when we're out on call. And I was just talking to her a bit about different things. I was talking about my mom's poor health. And she looked at me and she said, "Your mother must be really old."
Oh my goodness. Oh
man. Thank you.
So there's some humorous moments as well.
Councilmember Gary.
Thanks. Yeah, my latest rail line, chaplain, along in a different car, middle of the night, got to run around and see all that in action. So I appreciate it. The value is so important to have all of you who are involved doing what you're doing. So I say thank you as well.
Any other council members? Pastors, thank you very much for all the work that you do for our community, for our officers, and thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next item that we have on our agenda this evening is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. And we have a sign-up sheet. And the first person that we have up is Pastor Thomas Minnick.
Good evening. For the record, I am still Pastor Thomas Heritage Baptist Fellowship. I live at 13789 194th Drive, Southeast Monroe. Last Tuesday evening, Council surprised us by voting to not respond to the Growth Management Hearings Board. The vote was disappointing since we've done everything required of us throughout the whole lengthy, expensive, and successful rezone process. All five council members who supported last week's no response motion indicated the reason for their vote was that the city should not spend the money necessary to provide the additional information the board required. We argued that the staff's estimate was not accurate, that the city's costs would indeed be much less. Nevertheless, the motion carried. While we feel that the cost of defending the city's rezone decision and the city's EIS is the city's responsibility, I'm here tonight to tell you that we're willing to step up and assume the cost of providing the response the board requires. We spent the last few days working with PACE engineers, with attorneys who specialize in land use issues. PACE is ready to go to work immediately to provide a document that will fully comply with the board's requirements. So in order to take the cost issue off the table, Heritage will assume all of the costs of PACE's work. They will provide a compliance document. The board will be satisfied. And I repeat, these professional services will be provided at no cost to the city. And in light of this new information, I would ask that the council immediately vote to rescind last week's action and to instruct the staff to send notification to the board that the city will be responding after all, and to request the extension that was discussed last week. So if last week's vote was indeed the result of sincere concerns over cost, I submit that this is a perfect solution. I have a letter here addressed to Mr. Drazel affirming our reluctant, even grudging willingness to do this, but I have enough copies for all councilors.
Thank you. The next item that we have, and we'll pass this letter down the line. So we have a number of other comments here, public comments. We'll go ahead and proceed through those. The next person that we have is Randy. Randy, how do you pronounce your last name?
I've never. Esch.
Esch. Randy Esch. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Randy Esch. I'm the owner of Players Music Mart. And I'm here because I paid 4 parking tickets in the last year. As a business owner, I'm a little frustrated that they're being written, although I understand that a law is a law. Especially, even if there's only one vehicle out there and the rest are empty, which 2 of those tickets was about what it was. There's 30 to 40 open spaces. My accountant, who is normally there one day a week for 1 hour, she was there one time for 2 hours and 10 minutes and got a ticket. So she came right up here and paid it right away, but was asked what was she supposed to do. Well, she was told to park in the residential area and walk. Well, that's not going to happen with the girls who work for me. They're not going to walk. And I would like those people that would tell that to sit back behind the building there and watch what walks down through that alley. And then, after they sit there and watch for a while, and then try to say the same thing again. And I've been there, and I forgot to move my truck. I try to watch. The one thing that I have learned, that is, as a business owner, and this is my first round at it, is if you're not working at your business, you're thinking about it. And when I'm working at the store, the last thing I need to think about is getting a parking ticket or having to watch my watch to see if my 2 hours is over with. So around, I have to move my truck home and lock my doors while I do that. Because nobody has offered to come watch my store while I do that. Most of the time, there's only one person working at the store, so it's not that we're eating up a lot of parking places. I've got one scenario I'd like to give you. Somebody comes downtown, so they're going to go eat at Adams. So they go in and sit at Adams. They come out from their dinner and they look across the street and they see an Anthony's store. Well, let's go over there. Well, when they got out of their car, they saw this sign that said 2 hours parking. So after they come out of the antique store, they've been there an hour and a half. Well, I don't believe that they're going to say, well, let's go move our car so that we don't get a parking ticket. I think they're going to say, let's go. And so they're another store that might have had a customer isn't going to have one. Another scenario that bothers me a lot, in the wintertime when it gets dark, the streets are dark, around the buildings are dark, we're trying to work on that. I wouldn't want my wife walking downtown either. I know that they spent a lot of time in the last 15 years working on a parking plan. I don't mean to offend anybody, but I think that's silly. That's a long time to be working on something like that. And I think our time could be spent much more productive by putting the energy in bringing cars and people downtown. I know that being said, that the question will be, where will we put them? And my answer to that would be, bring them down, we'll figure it out. Because if we got more people, we got parking. That's a problem I'd love to have. Every day of the week, I'd love to have that. And right now, we don't have that problem. On Saturdays, when we should be the busiest, I ask you to drive down there and look. Drive down there and look. There's 30 open spaces. That's just in the one block. Now, I understand that a lot of this is not the police department's problem. It's not all the city's problem. That the businesses have to be involved in this too. I think we need to light up the downtown area more. There's some buildings there that really need some work. There's crosswalks there. The one right in front of my building is, I've seen some close calls there, but it's dark when it gets night. I know this is all easier said than done, but I think figuring out a way to get people downtown has got to be a priority. I don't think it's just up to the city. I think it's up to all of us. And I think we all need to jump in there in some form or fashion and work it out. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next person that we have is Patty Gibbons.
Good evening. My name is Patty Gibbons, and I am the owner of Heavenly Soap, which is located on North Blakely Street, directly across the street from the post office. I'm also a building manager for the Savoy Building on Main Street, West Main Street, which represents 115 to 117 West Main Street. And I'm here to talk about the parking, and I agree with much of what was just said. If you come to Monroe and you eat and you go to the store, I don't want you looking at your watch to see if you have to move your car in 15 minutes. I want you to keep shopping, to keep walking, to go into another store, to spend money. And if you do that and you come back to your car and you have a ticket on it, you aren't going to come back to Monroe. And you aren't going to tell any of your friends to come here and shop. I think that the parking, at the very least, should be 4 hours. And if we could do away with those restrictions, I think it would be wonderful. If people come to a warm, welcoming, inviting environment, they are more likely to stay, spend their money. And that's what we want. We want people to do that. And I think that would also encourage new businesses to come to the area. If you're looking around, looking at opening a business, and you see, wow, they can only park here for 2 hours, and we've got 6 stores around in the area to go to, there's not enough time to do that. It's a win-win for everybody. If we get more people down there, we will have more businesses. And yes, it's very sad to look at Main Street many times. Because Main Street is not only where my business is, it's also where I live. And I have seen a dramatic change in it in the last 4 years. I want nothing more than to see Main Street thrive and come alive. And yes, it has to be also part of the business owner. We have to take responsibility for certain things. But it also comes from the city. And I would respectfully request that the parking limits in the downtown core be changed to encourage people to come and shop and to encourage new business into this area. Because I would like nothing more than to see people fighting over parking spaces. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. The next person that we have, and trying to keep the parking people together. Okay, that's it for parking. Does anybody else have any comments regarding parking that would like to come forward? Aaron? And then we'll continue with the next topic that we have a number of people for.
Hi, my name is Aaron Agasnakra, and I live in downtown, and I walk through the parking area quite often. And I really think that it's a good idea, as these folks suggested, to get rid of the time limit. I have heard a lot of griping and folks talking about how they won't go back to downtown after they've got a ticket. And if you sit at a restaurant, you can easily eat up an hour and a half, and then if you see another place that you'd like to go, the 2 hours goes by pretty quickly. Furthermore, it's the community services officer that gives the tickets, and I think it sets up kind of an antagonistic relationship between her and the community, and she does lots of other things as well, so it's nice, I think, not to have that bit of resentment outstanding. That's all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to comment regarding parking in the downtown? Okay. We're going to go ahead and move on with the next person on the list, Mr. Chris Hunt.
The sex offender residency restrictions, and also with respect to the landlords renting or leasing properties to these people. I'd like to thank the members of the City Council with whom I've already spoken previously and coordinated via email and on the phone. I'd also like to express my frustration that the City Administrator has recommended not to change the existing code prior to the public having an opportunity to express our concerns here at the City Council meeting. A little bit of background on this topic. Two Love Two sex offenders moved in with the residents next to me on Hines Avenue this summer. One was convicted of rape in the first degree of a teenage girl, the other of rape of a child in the first degree. The residence in question is across the street from Monroe Freelance Elementary and Fairfield Park. Due to the current language in the Monroe Municipal Code, they were allowed at this address for up to 60 days following being served a notice of violation. Currently, both vendors are registered at the new address in Monroe, though they still frequent this residence, including occasional overnight stays. What was once a walking route for children attending the school is now largely avoided. Though I live near the elementary school and across the street from the park, when November arrives in a week and a half, I've had two such vendors frequenting an adjacent residence for the fourth month in a row. It's very difficult for me to talk about this situation as they were there when I got up this morning and then when I left for here. As the mayor and council review the code for potential revisions, I think it's important to remember that, as described in 6.06, the purpose of this chapter is to promote safety of children and other members of the community. With respect to this, the three points that I have listed here and also for the record include revisions to the 60-day grace period. That is also up to the 750-foot residency and lease restrictions in depth. I'd like to see if we could find that better. And their continued presence within the restricted area, even though they're beyond their time. Is it possible for the city, so with respect to the 60-day grace period, is it possible for the city to coordinate with the Department of Corrections, Washington State Department of Health, and Snohomish County in advance of the offender registering an address across from Monroe School, so that the code does not allow them to establish residency for a period of up to 60 days? If interagency coordination is not feasible, can the 60-day notice be considered for revision, including shortening the 60-day duration? With respect to the 750-foot residency and rent lease restriction, can the city clearly define if the 750-foot residency restriction from any public or private school, city licensed daycare operation, public or private park, or open space is property line, or by some different metric, such as structure, which doesn't seem to be applied when you talk about parks or open spaces? The city's estimate of 385 feet between the residence in question and Freelance Elementary is nearly double the property line distance when reviewing the online Snohomish County parcel view map. Continued presence within the restricted area. Though both individuals in question have registered elsewhere, now that their 60-day notice has expired, they frequent the previous address next to me daily, including overnight. By registering elsewhere, it appears as though these individuals are legally allowed to continue frequenting the residences directly across from Freelance Elementary indefinitely. They appear to be legally covered because they have registered elsewhere. Can municipal code be adopted to restrict this activity? I'd like to thank the mayor and the city council for their time, for considering the above described situations, for lessons learned, and appreciate the determination for the best path forward, including the possible revision of the code to minimize, eliminate the future opportunities for sex offenders to establish temporary residency and frequent in areas where children play and go to school. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The next person that we have who is signed up to speak is David, is it Menacher? Menacher? Thank you. Please come forward.
My name is David Menacher, also a resident of Hines Avenue. Mayor Thomas, council members, thank you for taking the time to listen to us tonight. Without being redundant and repeating everything that Chris just said, I'd just like this to be taken under careful consideration, given the nature of what we're dealing with here. 60 days is a big window of opportunity for a mistake to happen. Maybe it won't, but the possibility is still there. For me, I don't have young children anymore. Mine are grown. My significant other has a 12-year-old boy who frequently plays in the neighborhood. But I do watch all the other kids in the neighborhood play. To me, that's one of the best parts of living in the Prylands. I've watched kids grow up there. I watched my neighbor kids grow up and come back as adults, and they come back and hang out with my kids who come home to visit. You know, been there 12 years, 13 years now. It's a wonderful place to live. But I really think this ordinance and the revision of it should be considered carefully. This could be a young child's life at stake here. And if this was to fail because this ordinance wasn't revised, I think it would be on our shoulders. I think we would bear the responsibility of that. So again, I thank you for your time, and thank you for considering.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next person we have is Kelly Visenton.
Hello, I'm Kelly Visenton. I actually live right across the street from where the offenders were residing and are currently there 90% of the time. Every time I look out my door, they are there. I have a 12-year-old son. He can't go play out in the front anymore. He can't walk to the park, which is right across from me. I have a small business that I run in the summertime that's an ice cream and candy truck. And I kind of called it off this year because of what was happening across the street. I had an assortment of all of the neighborhood kids that would come and see my truck because it's real bright and cheery and everybody loves it. And last Halloween I had 160 kids come to my truck at my home. This year I don't want to do it. I'm scared. I'm really scared to have that happen. And I've noticed no kids in our neighborhood walking to school. They've all been rerouted. And they're all aware that they're still there. And I'm scared to death for my customers, my little kids, and my business. I always kind of have an open door policy. If the kids saw me out in my garage working, they could get an ice cream off me. You know, but nobody's coming around anymore. And the reason is very apparent, and I can't blame parents for having that concern. But it really saddens me as a business owner. It was my passion to do that part-time in the evenings in the summer. So thank you for hearing me.
Thank you. Next person I have is Ann Pittman. Ms. Pittman.
I'm here to support my son and his neighbor. I had been down at his house many times and watched the number of school children going around the corner to the school, the kids that go to the park. I'm a grandmother and a mother. Not only do we have the 60-day ordinance in question, but there's also a 30-day registration time that they have to register. So this actually gives these people 90 days to establish a residency where they have access to our children. And obviously, since this is continuing on after the 60-day notice has been given to these people, I suggest that maybe the ordinance itself is not even effective. I mean, if there's no way we can deal with this, it will prevent these people from staying there overnight after they've been notified to move out. I really think this needs to be given some consideration. Children, and our grandchildren, especially when they have to go by the house to get to the school, to get an education, to go to our park, to enjoy their recreation time. Please give this a little further thought.
Point of order, Mr. Mayor. Could we get the name and address? We neglected to get that from
Ms. Pittman.
Ms. Pittman, yeah.
Yes, we have her name and address on the sign-in sheet here. It's 15293 174th Street Southeast.
Thank you.
Okay, before we move on to the next person who's signed up, is there anybody else who would like to come forward to talk about the subject of sex offenders? Okay. Come on up.
My name is Brian Lund. I live on 54th Street Southeast in the same neighborhood. This happened to my family directly. My children, my nieces got molested. And I see these kind of people, you know, when after my niece got molested, it was strange to see them walk down the street because, well, they said, you know, they were sitting at one time, and my niece literally got done with right hand because she thought that the guy molested her was in the faith. You see the kids, if the kid's been molested one time, they live in constant fear. And these guys, if they're living around the street, I mean, they put the fear of God in kids. So we got to do something about it. You know, and that's all I can say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other members of the public that would like to speak on this subject? Come on up. Please state your name and address for the record.
My name is Ted Roche, and I'm a resident of Heinz Avenue, 15531. That's the address. I just wanted to echo what my neighbors have been telling everybody here in the council. And I, too, want to ask for your consideration in this ordinance and reviewing it. You know, it's one thing for, I guess, a sex offender to change addresses. And yes, they're compliant because now their mail maybe gets sent to another address. But I would ask that you make sure that, I mean, I don't think that was the intent of the ordinance, was around where someone gets their mail sent. I think it's more about where they spend their time. And so I would just ask you to reconsider how, I guess, the places where sex offenders frequent and the proximity to where they frequent, to schools, parks, and things like that. So thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to speak on this topic? Okay. The next person we have signed up is Una Workabaugh. Una?
I know that kind of a segue to the parking situation, we would all probably like to have a lot of cars downtown, and I know that I'm working very hard on that, and I also know that funding is limited, and that we've had a number of other board issues over the past few years, long before I came into town. So with that said, I have an opportunity to apply for some funding. And this is just an example. I'm not saying this is the final product. I just had to put something on the plate. But I have applied for a $10,000 LCAP grant through the county so that I can get some wayfinding signs on Highway 2, 522, 302, 203, and as well as Main Street downtown. I've already reached out to the correctional facility to get these signs made at a discounted rate because they're far less expensive than a normal sign maker might be, plus they're local and we adore having them here in town. And it would also, it would also make for a great collaboration. So again, this is just an idea and you can't even really see it all because the access word is gone for whatever reason. But the point is, there would be something that would be out on Highway 2 and on the main thoroughfares. We currently have over 60,000 vehicles a day that drive through Monroe. And a lot of those folks actually live here in town and they're commuting somewhere else. And they don't even know. I had a conversation yesterday with a lovely woman whose name, of course, escapes me. Anyway, she was interviewing me for the wine, and so you would know we're doing this. And she told me about this great story that she'd lived here for 35 years, and she was having just a basic neighborly conversation while she was out mowing the lawn with her neighbor, and they were bringing up the holidays, and that her neighbor mentioned about, you know, I wish there was a good bakery in town so I could go order a loaf of bread or I could go order a cake. And this woman was like, what are you talking about? We've got the Sky River Bakery, it's fabulous. And this woman had been here for 30 years and she didn't even know we had a bakery downtown. And that is just so sad to me. that we have residents that don't even realize that we have a historic downtown. So I know that there is a comprehensive plan that is in effect and that will be going into effect, and that is extremely exciting, and we want to take part of that, but it will also take some time. And so I am more than happy to spend $10,000 if I'm awarded this grant to be able to put signs up, even if they're only temporary for the next 5 years until we have a really good solid plan as to how to move forward, so that we can get some of those 60,000 people that drive through on a daily basis to know that we have thriving businesses in the downtown, and so that they will come downtown and fill up all of those parking spots so that people will have to drive around the block countless times and say, this is worse than Snohomish. That's what we want them to say, and I'm looking forward to having that happen, and I just wanted to give you all a heads up that I am working in that direction.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public that would like to come forward to speak tonight during public comment? Anybody at all? Okay. We are in need of an executive session pursuant to RCW 4230.110, subsection 1, subsection I. The council will now convene into an executive session for the purpose of discussing actual or potential litigation with legal counsel. The executive session is expected to last approximately 10 minutes, after which the council may take action in open session when it reconvenes. Since there are so many people here, we will move to back room. And thank you. We are in executive session now. Okay, we're back in session. The next item on the agenda is the consent agenda. Councilmember Gehring.
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Okay, I have a first and I have a second from Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. We are now, if it's okay with council, we're going to shift the new business items on the agenda. We will go ahead and move new business item number 3, which is the sex offender residency, up to the top. And then we'll follow that with number 2, downtown parking options. And then we'll go to the presentation on utility funds last. Is council okay with that?
Yes.
Sounds great.
Thank
okay.
you, Mayor.
So we're going to go ahead and move on with AB 14135. This is discussion, MMC 6.06, sex offender residency restrictions. Gene, do you have this?
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, over the past several weeks, we've had citizens and council members ask about our current code and how that's applied and how it's working. It's one of 3 or 4 in the state that are unique, and it's grandfathered in. And the concern we have is doing anything that would jeopardize that grandfather's status that we currently have. But there are some options to help support that.
Okay. Council? Councilmember Gehring, Councilmember Cutaback, and then Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you, Gene. So I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. So we're one of the few cities that has this sex offender residency restriction in place currently.
That's correct.
And there's only like 3 or 4 cities in the state or something like that that have this. And currently it's grandfathered in. Other cities are not allowed to adopt anything like this currently. But because ours is grandfathered in, we have this somewhat protective ordinance in place. So amending or changing it might affect whether this ordinance can continue on. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So does staff have a recommendation of some things that can help with the clarity, or some of the things that if there's not clarity, as someone mentioned in public comment time, concerning how the distance is calculated from a school to a park to where a sex offender might be residing. Is there something we can do to help clarify that?
There are some administrative regulations that we can put into place to help facilitate those types of things.
Okay. And possibly staff could look at that and bring something like that back to council so we can maybe provide some clarity in some of the language in the ordinance without effectively amending it, obviously just supplementing it with administrative code.
Absolutely.
Okay, that's it for me for now.
Thank you. Councilmember Gearing and then Councilmember Hanford.
Thanks. Yeah, I share Councilmember Kodak's concern with doing something that would actually, you know, negate or lose our grandfathered status on this because, you know, as I think about it, that might actually open floodgates that we don't want to open and make it much worse. So from that, I'm certainly interested in protecting what we have. But again, to Councilmember Kodak's point, if there's a way to better define, and specifically with the concerns that we've heard tonight, to make some things much more clear, as we've heard, I think we absolutely need to take those kind of actions. Is this the appropriate time for this? Yeah. And to that end, I will make a motion to move that the City Council authorize the mayor and city administrator to evaluate the possibility
of promulgating
administrative regulations to supplement and clarify the relevant provisions of the city's sex offender ordinance and to report back to the council with a recommendation in November.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Davis. I have a first from Councilmember Gearing, a second from Councilmember Davis. And I still have lights, so we're going to go to Councilmember Hanford and then Councilmember Cuddeback.
Yes, thank you. I will be voting in favor of the motion. Just confirming the concerns that both of you shared. And I'm very appreciative of the neighbors and citizens that shared their thoughts, and that's we really, as I've said many times before, that's what we want to hear. We want to hear you, your voice, and hear your concerns. Definitely want to see. I myself live near most of you, and so I share the exact same concerns. Definitely want to see things, whatever tightened can be tightened. And would definitely love to see more coordination with the county, more coordination with the DOC, more just all around more coordination. And not sure, not putting any blame whatsoever on police or the department here, understanding that if people don't communicate to you, then you don't have any clue because they didn't talk. So looking ahead from here forward, we really need to figure out how we can all work collaboratively to achieve greater awareness so that when a sex offender is going to move into Monroe, somehow instantly we are aware and we can get that news out to the neighborhood so that the neighbors are aware, because level 2, level 3, just from what was said about what this level 2 did, there's that kind of behavior. With that kind of behavior, the citizens need to be alerted that live nearby. And my wife, my family were very frustrated when we found out through a friend of a friend's Facebook post. And so it's very, very concerning that there is no notice given whatsoever. So, not to blame City of Monroe Police Department. I'm not saying that at all. But somehow we've got to work this thing out. Very frustrating.
Chief, did you have anything?
Yeah, I to a certain extent, I take offense that there's no notice whatsoever. It's put on the sheriffs. The sheriff's department has the responsibility for addressing sex offenders in the state of Washington, sheriff in each one of the counties. And they do the classifications of these individuals, and as soon as they do the classification, in fact, prior to doing the classifications, they put it on their website where this person is going to be living. Sometimes we get a registered sex offender with no classification, such as one that was on the first one on Hines Street. On Friday, we were notified, and there was no classification on Monday. We were notified that he was a level 2 sex offender, and at that time we realized he was within the footage that doesn't allow him to live there. From the school, distance from the school, we immediately served him a notice at that time. I would also like to add that, and it really doesn't have anything to do with that particular situation, but we check, in this city, we check every sex offender every 30 days, whether level 1, 2s, or 3s. And I was asked in the committee meeting, what do you do when you check them? We have a conversation with them. We ask them, are they still employed? Where do they work? What vehicles they drive? How many people live in the house with them, et cetera, like that. I do not believe there's any other city in the state of Washington that goes to that extent, checking on sex offenders. As I said, the most current notification is the sheriff's website of where these individuals live. And they notify us as soon as they are notified that a subject is registering at a certain address within the city limits of Monroe. And reference the 60-day ordinance, that is what is called due process. That sex offender, since he served, he has that period, that 60-day period to appeal our decision that he's not to live with in the particular residence. And who does he appeal to? You guys. And we have not had an offender appeal yet. I just ask that you seriously take into serious consideration with the city administrator said as far as the grandfather clause in this ordinance. This city is the envy of a lot of other cities because they don't have local control like the three cities in the state of Washington have, which we're one of them. It's outside the city's control, and every other city, we're not alone, so we've got to have local control on sex offenders.
Thank you, Chief.
Mr. Mayor, can I respond to that?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Chief, for clarifying that because that helps, I think, educate a lot of us as to how our department has been reacting and acting to this. So just to clarify, if a sex offender, can you just walk us through the process? So if a sex offender is going to move into the city of Monroe, the county notifies you?
First of all, they contact the county. They're required to contact the county. The county notifies the police department that they're moving into the city of Monroe. In the meantime, they have to fill out this risk analysis. The county has to fill out and then fill this out. And once they filled it out, then they make the determination how they're going to be classified. If it is a level 1 or level 2, we're notified. It's a level 3, we're notified, and we will set up a public meeting on a level 3 sex offender. And as soon as we're also notified, we check the address and check to make sure they're not in violation of any of the restrictions we have in our ordinance right now.
So then when you're notified, I'm trying to figure out where there's a gap because all of us neighbors didn't hear about anything until we happened to see a Facebook post. So
let me put this way. There were some that knew about it because we started getting emails that day. And they were checking the sheriff's website. And that's what I was saying. There is notification to the public, and it's the sheriff's website. They have the responsibility by statute to put that, notify the public in that manner. And they do a good job of doing that, and it's up there almost, it's up there immediately as soon as they person registers. But yeah, on that Monday we started getting emails.
Okay, so proactive citizens could possibly contact the county and sign up for a notification process, something like that?
Something similar to that, yes.
Okay.
Could do that.
So once we, the city of Monroe, are alerted to it, is there a step that we can make so that we, as soon as we are alerted to it, we put it on our news flash, we send it out with the utility bill? I mean, what process is there so that we can alert our citizens as a department?
The only process that we do right now is if it's a level 2 sex offender. And we work jointly with the sheriff's department. We set up a meeting and notify the different neighborhood and the school system.
Deputy Chief Kennard also had something.
Could I interrupt for just a second, Chief? Also on this particular one, we have a timing issue, and it could discuss, but this is right when school was going to start too. And part of making a public notification when we've never had anybody stay before, there was a concern of striking panic in the community about having a sex offender staying for 30 days when we've never had it happen before. So there was discussion about whether or not we should put something out. And because of the timing on this first incident, with school just getting started, we decided not to do that. It may cause more problems than we already have. And we were going to address it, as the chief explained.
So is that something that we could administratively change, possibly have staff look at it, of alerting whether there is a level 2 moving in as well, since right now we're only alerting for level 3s? Is that something that we can look at possibly make an administrative change to?
We can look at that. I'm looking around the room at the people that would tell me what we can include in administrative change, and we can certainly look at that. Yes.
Okay. Great. That's the real. I think that's the real concern that most of us share is getting the word out, and you know, however that happens, and again, I don't know the. Like you said, for level 3, we call a public meeting. So I don't know how that happened. You know, is it just posted on the website? Is it through the utility bills? So
that usually involves the school district too.
Okay. So I mean, there's got to, whatever we do, it's got to be like this flashing red light so that everyone. In the community sees it and there's a meeting we need to attend, and not I never heard about the meeting, why is that? So however we proceed, that's how I would love to see us make decisions. And again, I thank you, Chief, and Deputy Chief, for all of your work, and I appreciate you clarifying kind of the role that what we've done in the past. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Cuddeback.
When this came to our transportation, our P4 committee meeting, which deals with public safety, and I appreciate the chief bringing forward information that helped clarify for us this ordinance and how we are very lucky to have an ordinance such as this in our community that does offer some protection. Mm-hmm. However, I did bring up a concern at that meeting about notice and looking at how can we do better as a community to provide notice to our residents on a sex offender moving into the area. When I talked to Mr. Hunt on the phone, one of the things he mentioned was they had no idea until I don't know how long it was, but months after that, a sex offender had entered into the neighborhood and was residing there. As a parent, I can understand that concern, not knowing for a period of time and living your life normally, how you do it, kids running around, and not at least being aware of that danger. I work for an organization, and we get the flashes when sex offenders move into the area around our organization. And we, too, don't allow level 2 and 3 in our organization. Immediately when someone comes in, we check their name against the registry right there at the front desk. So I can understand wanting to put protections in place in order to make kids safe. I think we need to look at, if possible, I agree with Council Member Hanford about the notice, level 2 sex offender. Can you, Chief, do you mind just saying what that is?
Sure. Level 2 sex offender generally presents a moderate risk to reoffend with the community at large. Some characteristics are these individuals may be considered level 2 sex offender because of the nature of their previous crime. Level 2 sex offenders' lifestyle, drugs or alcohol use, other criminal activities may influence the potential to reoffend. These individuals often have more than one victim and or took advantage of a position of trust or authority, such as a teacher, coach, clergy, or babysitter.
Yeah, so to me, a level 2 is serious, and if there's any way that we can provide notice, whatever the best possible way that we could provide notice to our community, I think we need to look into that. I don't have the answers on that. I think, you know, that's working with the police department. I appreciate all the work you guys do to keep our community safe. But looking at, is there a way that we can tighten up notice so that residents do become aware of that, whether it's a public meeting for that, whether it's some information that goes out in a bill that's within so many, you know, miles of where the sex offender lives, something that we can come up to. And I appreciate, you know, hopefully we can look into that when we look into the rules.
Yes. Okay. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Completely agree with all the comments so far. I mean, don't want to do anything to jeopardize our current code. It is a bit sacred, if you will, being that we're one of the few cities to have it. But certainly there are ways that we can add to it to improve it, and looking forward to having that discussion. Chief, at the committee meeting, something that stuck out, if I understood correctly, that in regards to the notices given to the offenders themselves, there's also notice given to the landlords where they're residing. Did I understand that correctly?
Not a community meeting, no. No. We if the landlord has rented to a level 3 or 2 sex offender and it's within, say, the district one, within the distance to the school, mm-hmm. that's not allowed, then the landlord is also served notice.
Okay.
Because in our ordinance it said unknowingly. Well, when we serve a notice, now it's knowingly.
No. Sure.
And this particular landlord on Heist, I believe it is, did not rent to any sex offender because it had already been served in 60 days of not allowed.
Okay.
So if they rent to a sex offender, then they're suffering civil penalties.
Okay. Right. I think that's a great benefit to have in there, have that on notice. So I'm looking forward to seeing what comes back for further discussion. So thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments on this topic? Okay, seeing none, there's a motion on the table. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you. The next item that we have on the agenda tonight is going to be AB 14-134. This is downtown parking options. And Brad, do you have this one?
Actually, it's been going on for about 4 years. I've seen it in the old minutes from 1975 when they were talking about downtown parking. And it comes up about a couple of years. The current parking downtown probably originated, from what I've been able to find, in 2001 through the two-hour limit. It was a request of downtown business owners that brought that to the council that was completed at that time. Frequently, people, as they move in, ask for different parking restrictions, sometimes longer, sometimes shorter. Recently, we've been telling them to, you know, get together with the downtown merchants, you know, when Drew was around, to come back to the city council with a plan for downtown so we didn't have to change the parking restrictions every time a different business moved in. The latest time that happened was in 2013, March 19th, we brought a proposal to the council to change the parking now, it is now to a combination of 15-minute, two-hour parking and four-hour parking. At that meeting, some public comment was received, pretty much actually only half of what was received this time, because everyone who spoke this time was interested in longer parking. That time had some people more interested in keeping it the ways that are having shorter parking. At that time, the council decided to get together with downtown businesses, think about this, and bring it back at a future time. I met with the Chamber of Commerce Board in September to bring this to them. Brought them the maps that we had submitted last time in 2013, along with the map that was in your packet that showed the available parking out the alleys if they wanted to do something for employees to park behind the businesses. The board of the Chamber of Commerce thought it would be a good idea to temporarily lift the restrictions, the time restrictions of the two-hour parking, not how far away you can park from a fire hydrant or stop sign, those kind of restrictions, just the time limit restrictions, to suspend those for a few months to see how that went. That was brought to the P4 committee, concurred with that and thought that would be a good idea. The P4 committee wanted to have some metrics to measure whether that was a successful experiment or not. And then since then, I have also spoken to Pam from the city of Snohomish Chamber of Commerce, who they in the past have experimented with parking and also had parking lots for employees to park in. That didn't work. They found that for them, the best thing to have was have no restrictions. It's cut down on the amount of complaints. You know, businesses like it. So that's where we are. Any questions or?
Okay. Council, Councilmember Gehring.
Thanks. Yeah, Brett, this has been talked about in back and forth many times. I guess what was the date? It was well, that was suggested. I lost my page here. What was the
February 1st, 2015.
February 1st. Was that discussed in the committee? What, just a little bit of why that date? To me, that seems like. Maybe, you know, if that was going to be something to be done, maybe a little bit shorter. Do we need that long to really get the kind of data we were talking about? I'd love some more, maybe some little more background on that.
I think that, and you guys jump in, what Una presented was just to have enough time to see how it worked, and she was thinking, you know, 3 to 4 months was about the time that, so there wasn't any specific exact reason except they wanted enough time to experiment and give it time to see if the no restrictions was beneficial and to have a little bit of time to come up with a possible plan, a more permanent plan that they would then present.
Okay. And, Councilmember Cutaback had requested and we agreed that if we're going to do something like this, we really need some sort of maybe metric that we can look at and see if it was, you know, if we can measure if it was positive or negative. And so that being asked for, she said, you know, about a 3-month period would might be enough time to do that. So, but that was her, I guess that was her major concern, is that they not shortcut it, they give it enough time to actually see if it, you know, if they could get some feedback and maybe measure some differences. So
I would think there would be some immediate, I know that not every business owner is going to agree.
Yeah.
We have a letter for someone who doesn't want to have it changed, and certainly in meetings past, the room's been packed with people that are like, yes, absolutely, two-hour parking. You know, the story of the blue truck, which is on this letter, is, you know, is well known that, you know, everybody can see that blue truck, and, you know, the frustrating story to hear, where the 4 hours Doesn't really do anything for that blue truck parking in front of someone else's business, you know, at times when it's busy. So I'm curious about for the numbers that, you know, that you were looking for, asking for, what would determine success? How would you know, what would determine, yes, this is effective or not effective? I'm curious about how would that be determined. So you get this data back. How do you decide whether it's effective or not? Was that discussed at all?
What we suggested is the chamber and the business owners need to come up for a vision of what they want to achieve downtown around parking. Because, again, this has been being talked about for 40 years. It'll keep coming back around. If we have some kind of comprehensive parking vision or parking plan for downtown that the majority of businesses can get behind, not everybody's going to agree. But if we're going to test or experiment this no parking for 3 or 4 months, there has to be some way to measure success, that this is the best plan, whether it's a survey to the business owners, whether shopping increased. And it was up to them to come up with, how are you going to determine success around your parking vision, your parking plan? So I think that vision needs to come from the business owners, how they determine success, and we as city council and as a city are best able to support that by helping enact in ordinances that support that vision. So we didn't talk about specifics as this is the metrics you need to come up with. It was more, how are you going to determine if this is successful? Because the last plan seemed pretty successful. I mean, if I looked at it on paper, it seemed to have short term, medium, 4 hour, you know, it covered the basis. So Una did ask around, did talk to the city of Snohomish, did talk to other cities that did get away with restrictions, you know, for a period of time to test and to see if they could get more feedback and from the business owner. So really this is not a permanent solution per se. It really is an opportunity to collect more information, more input from the business owners, and then go from there and hopefully come up with, you know, a vision and then a permanent solution and a way to measure that solution really is working.
That's on them. What was the direction to determine that?
To come up with
how will this be determined as effective?
For them to come back with a plan and a vision and a way to determine success, that they would come back in February to council with this plan and a way to measure.
Okay, and just in the way that I'm thinking of it, wouldn't you want to have that plan before you did the experiment?
Well, this is an experiment to see if the no parking restrictions work. They need to have metrics to determine some type of feedback to determine if this experiment is working. But if it works, then their permanent plan would incorporate this experiment. If it doesn't work, right, if it comes back that business owners hate it, you know, the residents don't seem to like it, however they're determining whether this experiment is working or not, will then determine what their next step is, what their next plan is.
Okay.
They don't know if this is going to work. But we did ask for them to come tonight with some sort of a metric to determine, how do you know this plan is working? When you get rid of the parking restrictions, how do you know it's working? And they did not present that tonight. I do not see anything about that, whether determine this is going to, you know, the no restriction will work.
And I certainly know, and I want to make sure that I certainly heard the folks that were here tonight and expressing the concerns were 4 hour may work better than 2 hour. I know there's other ones that, and we've heard from them, where 2 hour works better than 4 hour. And so I'm all about the experiment. I'm a little concerned about just having none, you know, through the retail season. And maybe it'll maybe it'll be awesome. I guess I'd like to see, since it's on them to determine effectiveness, I'd like to see, well, at least what are you thinking about? You know, that would make it easier for me to say, let's absolutely run with it. I do see that the recommended action is preparing a resolution, not actually doing it tonight. But you have a comment?
Well, just one more on that. One of the rationale they used for kind of for getting rid of the restrictions right now really is the enforcement, as we heard tonight. Okay. The
Right, and that would be very frustrating. I understand.
The enforcement is haphazard at best because we don't have the staff to be able to do it, nor is it a priority. So that was one of their issues. Let's lift this and see how the parking works. Go ahead.
One of the other things is the current rate of parking, I guess, is the term, or all, is only about, 50% of the parking spaces are being utilized at this time. So, it's not like we're going to run out of parking places or it's going to cause a big problem in that way. So it might, this might be the time to experiment with something
like
that.
Check it out. Yeah. Okay. Very good. Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate all the clarifications. Thank you.
You're welcome. Councilmember Hanford.
Yeah, thank you. You've addressed everything. I'm in support of preparing that resolution to suspend them. The question I have is regarding the blue truck, things like that. Is there a way to, and I'm sure since we've been talking about this for 40 years, it's probably been covered, but a way to cover no overnight parking, something like that, just to keep, I'm questioning the same thing you're questioning, is if you just open the floodgates, then what's to keep people from parking right in front of the different businesses and just leaving their car there with no restrictions whatsoever? So just something that
Chief, do we have any rules that we apply regarding like abandoned vehicles or
10 days?
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else, Councilmember? All right. Council, do you have any? Are there any other members with questions or comments? Okay. Seeing none, is there an interest from Council that we prepare a resolution to temporarily suspend parking time limits in downtown?
Yes, I'm not going to push the button.
Is somebody going to make a motion to request a resolution? Councilmember Rasmussen.
Make a motion to prepare a resolution temporarily suspending parking time limits contained in resolution number 2012-028 in the downtown area until February 1st, 2015.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Hanford. Any discussion on the motion? Councilmember Gehring.
I'm in support of this evening. When we get it back, hopefully we'll have a little bit more information before it actually comes back to us for an actual vote. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is AB 14133. This is presentation of utility funds, CIP funds, internal service funds, and special revenue funds budget. I believe this is Diane.
General fund preliminary budget for 2015. Tonight we're going to talk about all the other funds. And I'm going to talk about some of the slides, and then we'll be jumping back and forth between Brad and John Landy and Ben and Ras. Anyone I can get in the
Who's the victim right now?
Yeah. Okay, we'll start off with utility funds. And the utilities are funded by rates, not taxes. They're run like a separate business aside from governmental activities. And I just wanted to mention that we are in the process right now of doing a rate study. Brad has hired a consultant, and they're gathering data right now, crunching it, and then they will be coming to you later on with recommendations of various rate structures and what the rates should be, depending on what kind of structure council deems appropriate for Monroe. And so in light of that, we're just going along, but please keep in mind that the rate proposals that we have in the 2015 budget might be different after the rate study is done, which won't be until 2015.
June.
Oh, June, really? Okay. So maybe it's reasonable. Okay. Each utility fund, because they're enterprise funds by state law, they have to be self-supported by rates and fees. They can't be supported by other tax money. And we have, because we issue bonds, but there's a bond covenant that says that we have to stay financially solid, which means we have to have a ratio of 1.25 of revenues to operating expenses. And operating expenses are all expenses excluding debt service and transfers to the capital funds, the CIP funds. So we'll start out with the water utility. And this is just the operating fund, not the CIP, the capital part of the water fund, the water utility. We're projecting revenues to be $3.7 million for 2015. Operating expenses will be 3.1. So you can see it's operating in the black, which is good. And then adding on to what makes up that additional $4 million of total expenses is the $625,000 of debt service payment, plus we plan on transferring $280,000 from this fund into the capital fund. Money is transferred, the rates are collected by the utility, and then as funds are available, they transfer it over to the CIP fund for long-term capital projects. So in 2015, we're planning on transferring $280,000 over to the water CIP. There is a rate increase of 4% proposed for 2015, and that is because we buy all our water from the city of Everett, and they are bumping up the rate that they're charging us by 11%, which translates to us as a 4% increase. And so that's strictly for the water purchase increase. The water CIP fund, I don't know if Brian wants to talk about this. It's getting that transfer from the water fund of $280,000, and we're projecting capital fee revenues from new construction of $225,000. And then we've slated $2.1 million in projects for next year.
If the council would be okay with that, I'd like to just talk about CIP altogether at the end. The project's kind of crossing it. We want to talk about the same project four times.
We can
sure.
Get out of it, perhaps.
Nice.
Okay, well, then there's going to be an ending fund balance of $2.9 million in the CIP fund, which is nice and healthy because we want to accumulate money in this fund for future projects. Sewer fund operating $7.1 million in revenues. Operating expenses are $3 million, but then when you tack on the $1.9 million in debt service plus a projected $2 million transfer to the CIP fund, you get your total expenditures of $7,000. There is a rate increase of 14% for 2015, and that's per a resolution that was passed back in 2011. This would be the last year of rate increases for the sewer fund. We've been doing 14% each year because for many years there were no rate increases in the sewer fund, and they got behind on their infrastructure, and we were unable to, we had to issue a lot of bonds, so that's why we have this hefty debt now to do the capital improvement in that plant. So, do you want to say anything at all about operations? No? Okay. You're leaving me out of here.
You did such a good job.
Thank you. the sewer CIP fund, again, we're going to transfer $2 million from operations to the CIP. There are the projects, Brad will talk about them, and then we'll have an ending fund balance of $3.3 million in this fund. And, I wanted to say, I'm showing the restricted fund balance as well, but that's separate from the ending fund balance, so it's actually an addition of both those amounts is your total ending fund balance, but we don't look at the restricted because that's for emergencies. Stormwater fund, no rate increase. We're expecting revenues of $1.5 million and expenses of $1.2 million. There's also operating expenses. There's debt service of $104,000. Mm-hmm. And we're transferring, how much are we transferring for storm? We're going to transfer $215,000 to the CIP fund out of this fund. And so that's what makes up the difference of the total expenses versus the operating expenses. And this fund will have an ending fund balance of $15,000, which is not a lot. I've been maintaining the restricted one for emergencies, but what this indicates to me and to you is that probably in 2016 we'll be looking at a re-increase for this fund. Just a heads up. There's the stormwater CIP fund getting $215,000 from the operations, expecting to spend $900,000 on capital projects, and going to have an ending fund balance of $751,000 for future capital projects. Solid waste fund, revenues are estimated to be $3.3 million, expenses $3.2 million, with an ending fund balance of $1.1 million. There will be no rate increases for 2015. We're going to continue with the community spring cleanup event that's always very successful. And with that ending fund balance, we will be absorbing any rate increases from our public service and not passing them on to the customers. Because as you can see, we're operating in positive right now, so we can absorb.
If I could take a moment. We have two council members that have pushed their buttons. Council member Cuddeback.
Diane, a lot of the CIP funds have a pretty significant ending fund balance.
Mm-hmm.
Do we invest that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so yeah. What is it invested in?
Generally, we're restricted by state law what we can right. invest in. My go-to is federal agency paper. Fannie Mae, Federal Farm Credit Bureau, those I buy $1 million chunks usually.
Okay.
And, we have about $11 million of them in a federal agency paper right now, and about $9 million in the state pool, which is liquid investment, but still getting a return.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's it.
Okay, Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. You said the magic word over public services, so that I hit my light on that. I was just trying to remember when they can say they want to increase something.
It's September 1st of every year.
Is when they can say, yeah, we're going to do this. I remember it's in the contract that we have. I couldn't remember what the kicker was.
They tell us in June that they're raising the rate September 1st.
And I'm trying to remember, do we get notified this year for a rate increase?
Oh, yeah, it was about 2.7%.
Was it 2.7? Okay, I couldn't remember if we got
it. It's usually about 3% that they've been hitting us every year with.
Okay. And we kind of expected that. I mean, I remember when we were discussing it back, I think it was 2010 when we actually signed that deal with them, about trying to cap that, and there was some back and forth with.
Yeah. It's a fairly regulated formula that they have to go by. It's it has to do with the actual dump fees that are charged by the county to them. And if those don't go up, they can't raise that portion of the fee. The rest of it is, there's two indexes that they combine. There's a whole formula. One is the refuse rate index.
That's right.
And the other is the CPI.
CPI, and I remember that
and,
now. Okay.
It's a combination of the two, and there's a cap, a 3% cap on that.
Okay.
And so you're using
right up. They play up to what they can kind of get away with. Very good. And then it's 2017 when that's up again. To renegotiate with.
Yeah, we can, in 2017, this next year we'll probably start looking at whether or not we want to go out for another full-blown RFP, or if we want to renegotiate the current contract, or if we want to do the extensions that are allowed. In the contract.
Okay, very good.
That would be the decision for
council. Thank you.
Good. Go ahead.
Okay. Revenue bond reserve is money that we are required to set aside because of the bonds we issue, and there's a three-part test that determines the amount that I do, and it's currently $1.9 million is our requirement. We are transferring in 2015 $25,000 back to the utility funds prorated on their amounts of debts, because each year as we pay off principal, it lowers the amount that we have to have in this reserve. So that's always a good thing. That's the end of the utilities. Now I'm going to talk about capital improvement projects, but aside from the utility ones.
So before you continue, let me just use this as a stop point. Does anybody have any questions or comments about what we've just seen? Councilmember Camford?
Thank you.
Camford. It says Camp.
Thank you. The question about the water. The city of Everett is bumping the water rates up 11%.
Correct.
This next year, but we're only going to charge 4%. Or how does that work?
Purchasing the water is just one part of our total operating expenditures. We have other operating expenditures, like changing out meters and everything. So,
first bullet.
What?
Wages.
Yeah. An 11% jump in that portion of our operating expenses means a 4% increase
okay.
overall.
Thank you. Thanks for clarifying.
Councilmember Gary.
Diane, can I ask a follow-up on that? Usually, for water, we've been pretty consistent with that's just a pass-through. I mean, there's a cost of doing business, and it's not us. And whenever it raises the rates, we raise the rates because, I mean, we haven't been able to, we can't always subsidize that. It's not us. It's Everett that's charging the rate
Correct.
Of the water.
We're increasing the rates exactly the proportionate amount that it's costing us
okay.
from Everett. Everything else is only the line up.
Okay, because I heard 11 and 4, and that was, and so maybe yeah. I misunderstood what the numbers.
There are 11 equals our 4.
There are yes. 11 equals our 4. Very good. Thank you.
Basically, what we do is we just increase the amount of money wow. the budget that we're paying them by 11%, added up at the bottom, and that's.
That's a 4% increase on
4%
our.
4% more revenue than we had last
year. Very good. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Here's a list of the current projects that the Design and Construction Division is working on. There's three fund projects. With the names, and the second column shows whether a consultant's doing them or they're being done in-house. The third column versus grant source is they're applying for grants for those projects. And then the grant status obligated means that we've been awarded it, we have the money. Recommended means that the lower level body that reviews these things is recommended approval. It still has to make it go to the Puget Sound Regional Council to get the final approval. In review means that the Transportation Improvement Board is still thinking about our projects. And the application means that we either are currently doing an application to submit or have submitted an application and something been done with it yet. Right now with the staff we have, we probably get down to project number 16 next year. We have in the budget included funding for a managing engineer to replace that position that's been empty for a while, which will actually allow us to do some more work and actually do some other things that besides capital projects that we have been trying to update for years, such as the design and construction standards that we use, and also we're required to do those based on our National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System stormwater permit that says that we're supposed to allow low impact development and have regulations in place to implement that, which will take a significant amount of time to develop. So we're hopefully we'll be able to get further down the list of that additional employee. We'll be doing some design work in addition to the management of the division. Also, depending on what the grant applications or the NERA review or have been recommended, if they get funded, we may shift the priorities of the projects and move some of the ones that we have. If we have money for it, the money has to be spent in a certain time and it goes up the list. So if you have any questions, and also the last four columns say if that project is doing street, storm, or water. Lots of them are multi-utility projects.
Indeed.
So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions or comments from council members? Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. In the order 1 through 31, it's just on there, or these are a little different than, like, for example, the transportation improvements where we've kind of said, oh, hey, let's yeah. have this one at top.
Basically, it's basically everything.
Or is it sorted on
money that we have, projects that need to be done to sell property in North Kelsey, that's number 2.
Yeah, sure, indeed.
Wastewater treatment plant, energy conservation improvements, is number 4, because that's underway already. So
right.
That's higher. The water system plant, sewage plant, storm system plant have to be done as part of the comprehensive plan update.
Gotcha.
And
okay.
Just generally thinking about staff time and which can get in there.
Stuff that's already in progress, stuff that we're going to have to do, obviously at the top, and then everything else is kind of, we have the money and the time
right.
for 2015.
What condition the sewer main is in,
right.
The worst condition it is, the higher up it gets, things like that.
Very good. All right, appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions? All right.
Okay, CIP funds that are not utility CIP funds. We have a general CIP fund. We don't have anything appropriated for it for 2015. We're just accumulating money right now, $436,000. We're hoping in the future to use this for the city campus plan or any other projects that are not street parks or utility related. Parks and Recreation CIP fund.
Okay. Carol will talk about this one. Council, last week I spoke about just about all of those. But just running down the list here, skate park improvements, we expect to go to construction and make those improvements in the second half of 2015 in the fall. So that's exciting that we'll have a, you know, a project where we're going to break ground and make an improvement there. The ball field improvements for city council, that is the $100,000 towards the school district. So that may be sent over this year, but, or maybe in 2016, but it's in the budget. Kevin Pitt master plan, I aim to do that in the first 6 months of 2015. So get that master plan. Park plan and master plan update as part of the greater comp plan update. That should wrap up by mid-year. I believe that's what the target is. And paths and trails projects, probably going to do about half of it in the first half of the year, the other half of the second half of the year. Probably do like a spring and a fall project. We're going to address an area, the Rainier View neighborhood, the trail there. And then there's another trail I didn't bring it with me, but it's in the Farlands near 522. There's a couple stretches that need to be repaired. Athletic courts resurfacing. That's the tennis courts and the basketball court at Lake Ty and also the basketball court at Whale Street. So we intend to do that in the first half of the year before the summer heats up. And then all of the others, ball field covers, playground safety surfacing, ball field safety surfacing, that's the infields, and ball field safety netting and fencing, those we intend to do this winter, so get done by mid-spring. And it'll be a combination of some in-house on some of these projects and some contracted work on the other projects as well. Questions? Thanks.
Street CIP fund, I think Brad covered that. 7.2 million in projects. Please note that the revenue portion of that, we're expecting 7.4 million in grants, impact fees of 103,000, and interfund transfers that 1.2 million. Most of that is we're closed. We have a separate fund where we were putting all our street impact fees and then transferring them over to this fund. And so I talked to Brad and we thought, why not do that? Let's just close it out and put it all in the street CIP fund and just account for it in a separate line item. So that's a transfer from the transportation concurrency fund is what we used to call it. And plus the 147, it includes the 147,000 that we're also expecting to expend from the transportation benefit district, that new sales tax that was voted upon this last year. And any fund balance of 2.3 million in this fund for future projects. Has Brad talked to you about those? The North Cassidy Development Fund. Land sales are estimated at 2.8 million. These commercial land deals, it's not like selling a house, and so this is what we're estimating is going to happen in 2015. It's our best guess from Gene's conversations with various developers and the real estate agent. So this is what we're estimating that they'll take place. These transactions take a long time to come to fruition. That 2.8 million plus what beginning fund balance, we're going to transfer 3.1 million over to the debt fund to pay off the receipt of bonds. We're also going to do the 350 storm project that Brad was talking about. That would leave an ending fund balance of 191,000 in this fund for any other unforeseen things. But like I say, usually I feel really good about our estimates for revenue, and this is as good as we could get. I just don't want, if I have to come back to you next year and say, okay, this land sale has been pushed off for another 6 months, I just want you to be forewarned that that can happen with these commercial deals. They'll ask for an extension. You know, if that price is right, we'll say, okay, we'll give you an extension. So that falls right into the North Kelsey debt fund. The principal is due November 1st of next year. The remaining principal is the $4 million there, and we're going to pay $47,000 in interest next year. If the land sales all go through like we thought, we'll have, excuse me, $3.1 million to pay off debt, and we'll have to roll over a small portion of this remaining principal into a new debt instrument, and then in 2016 pay it off with whatever land sales occur in 2016. However, I was talking to the bond underwriters, and they said if we're going to be rolling over any of the debt, they want to know by February in order to issue new bonds by October. And we're not going to know what's going to happen in February. So I'm thinking what's going to happen is we're going to end up rolling over the entire $4,070,000 next year. And then we'll set the bonds up so that as money comes in, we can pay them off immediately. A lot of times with bonds, you have set payoff dates. Like right now, the bonds that we are holding, they have two payoff dates, May or November. And, but we can set up the bonds to say we can pay them off early without any penalty, interest penalty. So I just want to give you a heads up. That's probably going to happen next year. I'll be coming to you in February and explaining this again. We'll have a better idea then how the sales are going, and who knows if, you know, Christmas comes early and we sell all of, you know, a bunch of land earlier in the year, we'll only have to roll over a little bit, but I'm thinking it's going to be the whole $4 million.
Yeah. Councilmember Gehring has a question.
Yes.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay, what does that do to our credit rating then if we have to roll over four versus just a little bit? We have a really good credit rating and don't want to do stuff to mess that up. I mean, we have things that are coming. And the other question, and just in advance, is we've done this a number of times before. I don't remember it taking 6 months for them to put stuff together. So February for something in October, which is actually 8 months. I've never known this to take 8 months to put stuff together when they've been here before. Okay.
But I'll ask them in February, I'll go, how far out?
Because if we can do the 6 month, I mean, April is still a better opportunity to have a more accurate number than February. So that'd certainly be my preference.
When I talked to Dave in preparing the budget, he told me February. Okay. But I said, how soon do you need to know? He said February. But come February, I can say, we have to wait till April, and they'll probably go
okay. Okay. Yeah, I don't remember. I just don't remember it ever being an 8 month process.
It's typically 6 months.
Yeah, okay. Very good.
And our credit rating, if we default on anything, that shoots us.
Of course.
Rolling over, I don't think it's going to. We have a really good credit rating. We've shown good faith by paying off, because originally this was an $11 million.
Exactly. We've cut it way down. Absolutely.
We're down to $4 million. Yeah. So we've shown good faith. We've shown that the plan that we had, we're sticking to.
Right.
That we're saying the land sales will go towards this debt. And so, and we followed through. So I don't think it's going to affect our credit rating. I think what it's going to affect is we might get a slightly higher interest rate.
Okay.
Just because we keep saying, yeah, we're going to sell the land, and you know, they'll say, you've said this now for, you know, 10 years or whatever.
We actually are now, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So, we might have a slightly higher interest rate.
Okay.
But the good news is interest rates are historically low, so I don't think it'll kill us.
Very good.
We'll be okay.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. That's it for the CIP and debt funds. Special revenue funds. These are funds that are required by state law and or management practices to be kept separate from the general fund so that we can show compliance that the revenues that these specific revenues are being spent the way that they're intended and not just going to general operations. The first is donation fund. We're just expecting, with budgeted $2,600 to spend, it really depends on how much we get in donations. If we get a ton of donations and want to spend the rest in here, we'll just come back to you on the budget.
There it is.
The lodging tax fund, the lodging tax committee will bring, they generally get the application, well, they receive the applications and make some designations of how they want to use the funds. And that recommendation, I think, will be coming back to council later this year. And it's anticipated to be $78,000. In the preliminary budget, it says $80,000, but Brad has since met with them, and they're looking at $78,000, which is close. Narcotic drug buy fund has $25,000 appropriated for this is drug seizure money, and it's only spent on drug operations, and they may or may not spend that. That's just the number that they set aside. Street fund is, this is our street operations fund. This is not capital projects. This is snow removal, potholes, street signs, pedestrian walkways, street lighting. They pay the fee to the facility fund. Revenues are $175,000 from public services, $258 gas tax revenues, which is based on population, not on how much gas we sell. And just an aside, the inmate population of the prison is calculated in that population. So even though they're not driving around on our streets, we get to count them for gas tax. So that's kind of a nice thing that we have. And then $44,000 charges for services. This is inspection services and engineering services. Operating expenditures are estimated to be $644,000. And again, capital maintenance from the TBD fund, Transportation Benefit District, is going to the street CIP fund, not in here. We used to do some pavement asphalt overlay and stuff from the street fund, but we've transferred that over to the street CIP fund. And so that since we've transferred the asphalt overlay and pavement preservation, I'm sorry, is a problem, better way to say it. We transferred that over to the street CIP fund. That's where the TBD money's going. The refund, we get excise tax whenever property is bought and sold from the transfer of title. We're estimating it to be $400,000 simply because we estimated $500,000 for 2014 and we're not coming in at it. And so I put in a conservative number. $100,000 is going to go to the street CIP fund. The other $100,000 is going to parks capital maintenance and the general fund. And then $200,000 is just going to sit in that fund, this special revenue fund, in case the revenues don't materialize. If they do, then next year when we do our transfers to capital projects, we'll have that much more money to do to transfer to capital projects. So this way, if the funds don't come in, we've got ourselves covered. Then we have three internal service funds. And these are funds that charge fees to all the other funds, the general fund, the special revenue funds, the utility funds, they for their services. And so we'll talk about those. IT.
Brad.
Ben's going to do it, of course.
Right, so next year we're going to spend, as you can see, about $27,000 less than we're going to this year. We're going to continue the use of outsourced network services. Kevin Sears from IS Outsource, we've had very good luck with using that firm.
Mm-hmm.
Our ending fund balance for replacement schedule is $60,000. We'll stay current with that. What do we do this year? We replace the phone system. Our old legacy phone system actually cost more to kind of let it just kind of beep along if it had a heartbeat than it did to replace the whole thing. XP went away, as most of y'all know. They finally pulled the trigger on that. So we standardized everyone's operating systems and then upgraded their office suite as well. We improved Brad's emergency operations center. It's not really called that, but for easy enough. The bunker, Brad's bunker. we've got it now where it's very consistent. If Brad can go out there and log into his computer, and it will be just like if he was there, someone in the fire department comes over and tries to plug in, they immediately go outside of our network, so they don't bring anything clunky. Not that they would, but hypothetically. And it works like it should. So it's like insurance. Hopefully we'll never have to use it, but it's there and it works. We deployed new firewalls for the SCADA systems and public works and wastewater treatment plants. Again, those control, you know, the wastewater and, you know, our drinking water. The firewalls were old. We gave it a little bit more robust. There's been a lot of, you know, foreign attacks, I think, coming, is that correct, on the SCADA system, so we wanted something a little bit beefier. And next project for us at the end of this year, we're going to migrate our email archiving system. So Postini's been acquired by another large company, and we don't believe it's going to work for us going into 2015. That's a lot of work that Kevin's going to have to do before the end of the year. Next year, we're going to work on internet redundancy. We have it out in the emergency operations center, so if our internet goes over, we have a failover, we're going to implement that here as kind of a test project to see how it works out there. It works great. So we'll kind of put that on the scale. Investigate VPN. I put this up just for Liz. She really wants to work from home for some reason. So we're going to have a couple people. We're going to try that out and see how it works. So I know most of you that work in the private sector already have that, but we're slow. Upgrade our Windows Server licenses. Our Windows Server licenses are set to expire late next year, so we're going to start that either at the end of this year or beginning of next year, just so we make it in time. Microsoft will probably say they're going to extend it, but we just want to get rid of that. We're going to implement third-party patch management system. Today, if Adobe needs an update, Ken has to go to each computer that has Adobe, sit down there, punch in the update, and then walk away and do the next one. So we're going to save him some time and implement a third-party patch management that will be able to touch our computers and then update without him having to go to each one. So, questions?
Done.
Fleet equipment. Jake has sent me an email and said that he accidentally went to Mexico, so I'm going to present this for him.
I just went up there.
So are there some cases?
So the total expenses for 2015 are going to be $992,000, and this includes fuel at $166,000, maintenance on fleet equipment at $180,000, and we have scheduled replacements of $369,000. We finally have this rolling now, so that the ending fund balance per the replacement schedule is $2.7 million, and that's how we put, you know, a little money away each year, and we're able to do this so that we are able to replace our fleet and our big equipment as they wear out, without having to be so surprised that things wear out. And so this is working really well. Jake is constantly working on new ways to measure things. When we first started, it was just years of service. But now he's got a nice little sophisticated software system, and he's doing operating miles, running miles. For instance, police cars, they sit running, because if they go into the office, you know, to get something, and if there is an immediate call, they have to be able to run out to their car and just take off. So that's what they need, the engine running. And so there's like running miles, and then there's running hours on the engines. He's got all these calculations, and so it's a lot more sophisticated and a lot more efficient. So he's doing a really nice job with this internal service fund. The other one is the Facilities Management Fund. Total expenses $1.2 million. And this includes all the city's utilities. Street lighting charges run a little over $100,000 a year. Building maintenance repair. As you can see, for instance, the jury room here that's being built, this is all done through the Facility Management Fund. Everything that's done here is done in-house if we can. And we can do a lot in-house. And so the ending fund balance per the replacement schedule is $55,000, which they are meeting. And this is more of an operational type of internal service. Any questions at all on it?
Nope.
Okay. So next two meetings in November, we're going to have the public hearing on the budget, two public hearings on the budget. And then the first two meetings in December, we'll have the readings of the ordinances on the budget, hopefully adoption on the 9th. So please, please, if you have any questions, ask here, ask, send me an email, call me. If anything that you're not sure about or that you want me to explain a little better, because this is a lot of information just thrown at you all at once. We go through it all the time, so we're familiar with it, but if you're coming in cold, it's a lot. And so I totally understand if you would like anything explained again or in more detail, or if you would like time to have discussions on anything, if there are any particular things that you would like topics of discussion. But I'm pretty much wrapping up.
Thank you very much, Diane.
Thanks, Diane.
Thank you, Diane.
Okay, the next item that we have on the agenda, Diane, you can't leave yet, is AB 14-136. This is approval of ordinance number 013-2014, setting property tax levy, final reading.
And all I have to say is this is the same one that was here last time, and it's not too late to add that 1%.
Okay. Councilmember Gehring.
Thanks. I move to adopt ordinance number 013/2014, fixing the amount of taxes to be levied by the city for the calendar year 2015.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Gehring, a second from Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you. The next item that we have on the agenda is council member reports. Let's go ahead and start off with the Legislative Affairs Committee, and then we'll go council member to council member. I would like to take the...
Thank you. We met tonight, and I'll just let City Administrator Brazel give a brief update on media, social media policies.
Thank you very much. We haven't had a lot of time to put many hours in on this, but Liz has done some research from some other cities, once again, looking at... what they have in place. We have three examples in front of us that we're going to start merging, and we'll have something in front of you middle of next month, I believe it is.
Okay. Anything else, Councilmember Hanford, for report from committee? Okay. Councilmember Gehring?
Nothing to report tonight, thanks.
Okay. Councilmember Davis?
I have nothing. Thank you.
Councilmember Rasmussen?
Thank you. Had an opportunity to attend a community breakfast at the Snohomish Boys and Girls Club, Snohomish County, last week. Very outstanding, very inspirational stories going on in our community. So glad to be a part of that. This Saturday, there's a run going on. I got committed to it when it came up, so I'm doing it. I challenged everyone else to do it, so I guess I'll see you guys on Saturday. That's all I have.
Councilmember Cutterback.
Nothing tonight.
Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. I don't have any updates, but I did have a question. If we were going to be, I thought it was going to be on the calendar to get an update on the lady with the broken water main.
Yes, we're going to do that during staff and department reports.
Oh, great.
Reports.
Thank you.
Yep.
Just wanted to make sure.
Very good.
Yeah. Anything else, Councilmember Hanford?
That's it.
Okay. John. You sure? Okay. Mike.
Thank you. Excuse me, it's the same run. Just announced the Sky Valley Classic. That's downtown Monroe. It's moved from one side of downtown Monroe. It starts at 9 a.m., so there's a couple blocks of Main Street are closed off, so it's going to be a fun event. 1 mile, 5K, and 10K.
Thank you, Mike. Ben.
So, getting back to the water main break, I'm going to talk about the risk management side. I think Brad will update you on the plan to mitigate. I fully don't understand that. It's all that Brad does in here and stuff. That claim came in on a Thursday. We had people out there immediately, even at the public works folks, in the basement of both houses, pumping out the water to mitigate that. I came in, I called WCIA, we got the claims adjuster in contact with the two claimants, and the adjuster was out there on this Saturday. As of last week, all the work had been done for the damages, and they were just waiting on bills, and then they were going to close the claim. Just so everyone understands the claims process from what I do. When a claim comes in, the claimant fills out a claim form, I then send the claim off to WCIA, they then assign an adjuster, and then the adjuster takes over from there and ensures that their claim, they get everything. The claimant has a choice. We can, the adjuster can recommend certain companies or provide more assistance, or if they want to do it on their own, they have a, if, you know, we break somebody's window out mowing, and they, when they already have a relationship with an auto body shop, they can go get the estimate, and then we'll just, the insurance company pays them directly. In this case, the, I believe both claimants opted to have WCIA's adjuster go out there and then find the contractors for the work. But to date, everything's done for both houses. There's two houses that were impacted, and they're just waiting for bills to come in so they can close up.
Do you have any questions about the claim side, the insurance side?
So it sounds like it was just a series of unfortunate events that...
The one house four times, yes. Now, what he's talking about is the fourth time, which involved two homes. But yes, it was one house that was impacted four times over the course of how many years?
20.
20 years? Still, four times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I went out on the previous break. I believe that was in November. It was on a Saturday. That's...
I saw you there.
Council member Darren there asked me what I was doing on Saturday out there, which people are actually doing work. And Gene responded because I was coming in late to the last one. So we've been out there on the last few breaks, either, you know, Public Works or something out there doing the work, and someone from the admin side has been out there just because it's a sensitive issue. So we're on it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so let's go to Brad then and talk a little bit about the mechanics, the engineering component, and then we'll head back to Diane.
So earlier in the summer, because of the three initial water breaks, we did replace the water main on Park Street, which is the north-south street in front of Mrs. Osborne's house. So that took it down past her house and then makes a left turn. So we replaced the park that had been breaking. We did that work this summer. And then unfortunately, the water line that at the end of Park Street goes towards Kelsey Street. So basically it's a cross-country water main in people's backyards from Park Street to Kelsey Street. That one broke. That was the latest one that broke. In Mrs. Osborne's location, she's the only person on that water line by her house. So actually went a little bit farther east and closed the valve, capped that water main, and actually abandoned that portion of the water main so it can't break anymore, and rerouted her water service to the new main on Park Street. And then on the list you have in front of you, there is the park, where it says, somewhere. Park to Kelsey Utilities Replacement, number 11. So we'll be designing a new water main and sewer main that are currently cross-country south end of Park Street to be moved up to Powell Street. So those will be both brand new lines.
Any questions? Okay.
Appreciate the update. Yeah.
Yeah. And I did meet with Ms. Osborne after as things were finishing up from the third claim. And again, I'd understood that things had been taken care of. It was this fourth break that occurred a couple weeks ago that was a surprise and something new. So anyway, any other questions on that? All right. We're going to go ahead and head back to Diane, and then we'll come back to Brad and the chief. Diane, you sure? Okay. Brad, anything else to report from engineering and public works? And
because you asked last week, flagpole at Kelsey Roundabout is supposed to be installed on Halloween.
Nice.
Thanks. Okay, chief.
Two things. First of all, our two motorcycle officers have passed their course, and they'll be certified, and they'll be home tomorrow. They're over in Spokane right now, and you should look forward to seeing them on the streets within probably two and a half weeks, something like that. So, the second thing I have, get back to sex offenders and notification. The state legislature designated the sheriff's office as the agency to register sex offenders and the agency to notify citizens of their location. Thus, they also have a limited amount of liability with that. We don't have that. But, and you asked me why that's important. If we were going to place person's information on our website and we put the wrong address, if you one digit off, and this has happened in Monroe before, that some of our concerned citizens contacted our residents and caused some problems there, we'd be hanging out big time. I have a way of getting around this. I've been thinking about it, and I think we can work something out without causing ourselves any liabilities. So.
Okay. Sounds good. So we will follow up on that.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else, Chief?
No.
Okay. Liz, do you have anything for council?
Really quickly, an update on the student representative to council. I have still not received any applications, and the agency contact that I have been emailing with has not received any as well. She indicated she was going to try to talk to people last week during homecoming, and then I contacted her this week to see how it went. And I haven't heard yet, so just a reiteration, I've offered to see if council, mayor, any staff could go up there and talk to people, try to get them a little more interested, but they have not yet said, let's do that. So I'm just waiting in the wings, and if you know anyone, or know anyone who could go and find someone, or, you know, that's obviously, you see a big benefit to having them come here and report out, so... just wanted you to know that's still on the plate and still following up with them. And then second, I just wanted to remind everyone about the public records request that I sent to you, and I need response on that, yay or nay, of documents or no documents by Monday. And I appreciate you listening. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Gene, do you have anything?
Two things real quick. I just want to give you an update on WSA, the compact. We obviously are part of that compact, and what that means is that we have certain requirements we have to meet every year. Some are, have to do with training, audit requirements, and attend board meetings. So I just want to let council know that we have met those requirements, the compact requirements for 2014. Ben and I attended the last board meeting of the year last Friday, and we signed in for not only the city but the TBD, so both entities get credit for that. So the other thing that I wanted to inform council about is at staff level, we've taken advisement from council in the past to keep you informed of what's going on in planning and permitting. You've told us it's important to keep customer service first and foremost, and we've been working on that. As you know, we've still got some gaps in that department. We haven't had a director in a number of years, and that is a great need in that department. Because we don't have the budget coming up in 2015, we've kept our finger on the pulse. There's a lot of projects going on, especially with the 2015 comp plan update. So we needed additional help in that department. So what do we do when we need that help? We call him Mr. Feilberg. So we've once again merged planning and permitting back with public works. We did that several weeks ago, and that's why you've seen Brad helping out more. The staff has been informed of that, but I just really appreciate Brad stepping up once again to help out where that need is. So that's your update for tonight for me.
Okay. And then as for me, just a couple of things that I was involved in last week. First, Councilmember Hanford, Councilmember Camp, and I attended the Snohomish County Cities dinner. We held it at Paula's Wine Knot this year, and I perhaps I found it too amusing that I kept asking people, but asking them if they were vegetarians because we were going to be eating dinner in the slaughterhouse where they used to hang the meat. So it was a but it was a really nice event. It was catered by Adam, Chef Adam from Adams. There were probably about 45 people at it, and which was more than they had at the City of Edmonds back in September. The Snohomish Health District director, whose name is escaping me right now, talked about what the Snohomish Health District is up to, talked a lot about Ebola. People kept wanting to talk about symptoms of Ebola as we were finishing dinner. Don't recommend that. So one of the things that he talked about was the issue of funding. The county provides funding in part for the health district, and this is not anything new. I'd heard them talk about it when I was a council member. They were talking again about how they'd like cities to help participate in funding the health district. The other thing that's important to note is that for next month, it'll be held in the city of Mill Creek, and they're going to be working on finalizing their legislative agenda that is part of what we went to Olympia with. So I would encourage council members to attend the one in Mill Creek in November. The other thing that I had the pleasure of doing on Thursday before that meeting was being part of the dedication for the Steam Stack. And the team staff was kind enough to put me in a bucket and raise me above the ground, harnessed in so that I could take a bottle of sparkling cider and whack that against the side of the Steam Stack. Again, I want to thank our Chamber of Commerce and Fred Wolfstone and everybody else who, Una, everybody else who was part of making that happen. I really appreciate that. And I think that's all that I have to report for myself tonight. So, Gene, why don't you go ahead with the agenda and the extended agenda.
Thank you, Mayor. Draft agenda for Tuesday, October 28th, 2014.
I do have one revision for the agenda. Since Councilmember Camp was out ill tonight, I'd like to go ahead and put Councilmember Camp down for the pledge, and then Councilmember Davis will catch the next one.
Thank you. In the consent agenda, under new business, we have approved ordinance number 014-2014, establishing the municipal court. And we have the interlocal agreement with Index for on-call services. Been working on that for months with them. They want to be able to utilize our on-call service provider to review plans and that type of thing in the future. And then the draft agenda for November 4th, 2014. I might add on the interlocal agreement, that's kind of an interim patch because currently we don't have piggyback language under our existing contract, but when we go back out for bid next year, we'll be adding that. So it'll come back in a different form again next year.
Very good.
Are there any questions or additions or what have you for the October 28th Tuesday agenda? Okay, go ahead. Extended agenda.
Any additions or deletions?
Yeah, again, note that Veterans Day is canceled. We canceled that last week. And please let us know if you're going to be out any of the days. And we will add in here the sex offenders administrative material for sometime in November.
The time for the joint meeting on Thursday, is that still, since it's a Thursday?
Yes.
Is it still 7 o'clock?
Yeah, is the November 13th joint meeting with the Planning Commission, the CAC, and the Parks Advisory Board, is that still at 7 o'clock?
I think it is.
Last I heard, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. If we just get,
we'll get,
next time
we'll get a
we
confirmation
get a thanks, yeah.
That that's at 7 o'clock
yeah,
for next
yes,
week.
But I'll check.
Are there any other questions or comments, additions, subtractions from the agenda? Okay, seeing none. Do you have anything else, Gene?
I do not, thank you.
Okay, does anybody else have anything for the good of the order this evening? Okay, seeing none, I have no other business for this evening. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Okay. I have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Cutterback.
Second.
And a second from Councilmember Rasmussen. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much. Yeah.